And so I put an Etsy listing up with these roots, and I got a sale. And I'm like, we liked the site. We liked the people that we met through the site. And so we pretty much used that exclusively.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name's Cormac Harkin, and today I've got Brian Aleksevich with me from the Lodge Project. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, how we doing, man? Finally nice to hook up a time and actually get together. I think we've been talking about doing this for like 6 months.
In various guises, I think I was supposed to do a recording with you and then back and forth, but we got here in the end.
I mean, we were going to exchange interviews, and in the meantime, I stopped doing them. So this is a one way at the moment, but it might actually spur me to get back into it. So,
no bar. Do you want to give us a quick introduction, just who you are and about your channel and things?
Yeah, man. My name's Brian Aleksevich. I do this thing called the Lots Project. I'm not really sure what you would call it. It's kind of it's the YouTube channel, the brand, the business, the philosophy, I guess. My wife and I in 2014, I believe, we purchased a 35-acre homestead in Minnesota. Worked pretty consistently for 5 years on building that up, like all in. We did all the things. We were so consumed with it and busy. We worked full-time jobs. We went into multiple different animals and plants, products, developing the property. And then at one point, 5 years in, we realized that we didn't want to be in Minnesota anymore. We had started kind of a YouTube channel and a brand around our farm. And we were like, yeah, we can't do the cold anymore. You know, it was coming into winter. And in Minnesota, we were just, you know, last frost was end of May. First frost was end of September. So like you were pretty tight in your growing season, and we were just done with the cold. I worked outside for a living plus all the farm stuff, and I was done with the negative 30. It's silly. And so we were going to pick up property somewhere in a better climate, just a piece of raw property, and take everything we had learned from 5 years and just start fresh. We didn't care about power. We didn't care about plumbing. We were perfectly content to do solar, off-grid stuff, outhouse, whatever. And in the process of looking for a new piece of property, we decided that we were going to need someplace to live while we built our structure, whatever we were going to do there. And so we decided we were going to outfit an RV to live in, be off grid, be able to boondock and be sustainable while we figured out what we were doing. And in the process of going through building the trailer out and everything, we decided, you know, why are we buying a piece of property and going there when we have this mobile unit that's self-sustaining, that we can boondock, we can go without power, we can go without water, we can go without sewer for weeks at a time? Why don't we just travel around and figure out where we actually want to be? Let's go stay somewhere in our trailer before we buy a property. And so that kind of spurred this whole new brand. And LOTS, L-O-T-S, it stands for Living Outside the Systems. Pretty much we've kind of transitioned away from normal life. I mean, we live in a camper, full-time RV, and running around the country. We've pulled away from all the kind of the mainstream medicine, healthcare here in the U.S. We've pulled away from politics. We're apolitical anarchists. We don't give a shit about it. Sorry about the language on your podcast here, but like it doesn't matter to us anymore. We're living our day-to-day life. We're worrying about what affects us. We're aware of what's going on around us, and we're trying to insulate ourselves from that. You know, if we're plugged in where we're staying right now, we do have power. But if the power went out today from a thunderstorm, we wouldn't even know, because our trailer is set up with solar and batteries and all of that. If the, you know, the biggest thing transitioning in the trailer was food security, we're working on that. But really, we've insulated ourselves to the point where whatever happens, we just roll with it and literally could pick up and roll to somewhere else and do what we got to do to figure it out. So that's kind of where I'm at. But along the way, I picked up all sorts of side hustles. Like one part of living outside the system is kind of providing for yourself. My wife does have a full-time job, and we're very fortunate that she can work remotely. And since we have internet with us, she can work from anywhere. And I'm kind of building a side hustle empire, man. Like, that's what I do for money, is all sorts of everything. So many different trickle streams. And yeah, so that's kind of me in a nutshell, I guess. If I mean, there's way more. I'm a very complicated man, I guess. But
that's great stuff. And we'll get to that in a minute. So the reason I asked you on the show today, so the show's for like permaculture professionals, education, and you have a couple of, well, a lot of side hustles and income streams as well. And that's why we invited you on to share. But do you want to go back to the homestead, just on the on, yeah, on the farm? Tell us a bit about the property, what kind of animals you had, and just the general sort of any business ventures you had going there.
Absolutely. So we moved up to the farm. We were going to try to make that an income completely. We wanted to both be full-time on the farm eventually. We looked into every possible avenue for that. We had 35 acres, a big mix of, we had two large, what had really been one, I shouldn't say that, one of the fields was taken care of by one farmer who put organic compost on it, never stripped it down too much, hayed it once a year. If it was viable to hay, if it had been a dry year, she'd skip it. The other field that we had was about 5 acres that had just been hayed every year. Roll it, don't add anything to it, didn't run animals on it. So basically when you walked out there, when it was chest high, it was just wispy, like chest high, wispy, one or two really dominant species of grass. And so we didn't know what we wanted to do with it. We continued to let the one farmer take care of the organically taken care of field. She did an awesome job. She did it the whole five years we were there. We never expanded out there. We were there 7 years, really working 5 years and then transitioning for 2 years. But she kept taking care of that. We never got to that part of the property. The backfield is where we started. It was right behind the house, you know, permaculture work out. We made plenty of mistakes, but that is one thing we did. We kept things close to where we were so we could see it all the time. We tried to determine what kind of animals we wanted to run to help fix that field, what kind of revenue streams we could bring in from animals, what was small, easy to get started, and beneficial to everything. We pursued chickens. We got laying hens. We got meat birds. We got meat birds out on that field as soon as we could. The transition from meat birds across that field was unbelievable. But we were selling those meat birds. We were selling the processed meat birds. We were spinning up a side hustle to rent the tractors, basically. Like the people, like almost like a tractor share, where we had the tractor, we had the property. The people bought the birds and paid a premium for the birds and the feed and everything. And the premium was our cut for raising them. That model was being put into place when we left, when we just kind of had enough. And that was another thing with doing the animals, doing the meat birds. Our season was so short. So that was one of the side hustles we did with the chickens. Another was we ran a hatchery on the farm. We sold everything from hatching eggs all the way up into laying birds and everywhere in between, pretty much. We were hatching them for ourselves because we wanted to be sustainable. We had a breeding system set up with our chickens. We had isolated single breeds. We had like barnyard flocks. So we kind of sold the whole gamut, whether you wanted a cheap chick that was like a tractor supply barnyard mix, all the way up into the chocolate Morans, the deep dark eggs that bring a real premium. And we sold everything in between there, from everything from egg to adult bird. So that was kind of a little bit of a venture. But the thing that I really focused on the most for the long term that we were there was stuff that grew on the property. When I was doing the research about kind of planning out what we wanted to do, how we wanted to tackle this thing, I was pretty deep into the survival podcast, listening to Jack Spearco talk about permaculture and survival and preparedness. And one thing that he talked about the time we moved up there was comfrey and how you can propagate it and how basically it's like growing money. And man, I listened to the episode he did about it. I thought about it. I looked up his old videos on YouTube on how he propagated it, how he grew it. And I just started, it sat in my brain and it spun around. I started doing the easy stuff, the animals, that's easy. We also sold quail, the same as the chickens and rabbits. But that comfrey just sat in the back of my head. And about a year or so after I heard Jack talk about it, I ordered some, finally. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give this a try, see how easy it is. I ordered like a dozen root cuttings, I think, or maybe it was 25 root cuttings from the guy that Jack recommended. Excuse me. And I planted it. I gave it the time. I looked at the care instructions from the guy that sent it and basically put it in the ground and watched it. And they started coming up a little bit of green here. And then all of a sudden it just took off. The leaves started coming in. I was like, oh, wow, this does grow fast. This grows fast. I started looking into all the different things you could use it for, both the leaves, because he talked about how magical the leaves were and how good it was for medicinal purposes and compost building and soil building and mulching. And so my mind's just going crazy with all these different ways to use this leaf because it's growing so fast. And as I was looking into it, they were like, yeah, as soon as it starts to send up shoots with flowers on it, cut it off at the ground, it'll grow back. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm pretty new. Like, we came out of the suburbs. I didn't grow up with a garden. My mom planted flowers in her front yard when I was a kid in a little flower bed, bought them every year, all annual stuff. My whole life was apartment, city, suburbs house, you know, like maybe grow a tomato plant. But I didn't know anything about like perennials and all this stuff. And so what I'm reading, they're like, you can cut it off 2 inches above the ground and lop it off and it'll grow right back. And depending on the soil conditions and the plant strength, you could do that like once a month. And I'm like, no way, no way. So I waited and waited and waited. I was super nervous to cut these plants off. And I like made sure I had a bunch established and I did one and I'm like, cut it off. And I'm like, oh my God. Sure enough, man, like whoop, bigger and better, came back thicker. And I'm like, okay, all right. So Corey and I, my wife and I, started figuring out how to use these leaves. We started drying them. We started using them in our compost, like feeding them to our chickens, feeding them to our rabbits, laying them down for mulch. And then we had so much that we started drying it. We started making salves out of it. We started making poultices out of the fresh leaves and then preparing it and saving it for later later use with the dried leaves. And a poultice, if you don't know, basically, if you got a sore elbow, you put comfrey leaves on it fresh, or you mash them up with water and make a paste out of it, basically, with flour and water, and then wrap Saran around it and let it sit. And it just like supercharges getting some goodness in there. So we used that. We started selling salves on Etsy, and we're like, man, this is a great crop. It just keeps coming back. And all the time I'm thinking about these leaves, I kept thinking about Jack and his propagating the roots and the fact that I had bought roots for someone and how much I paid for those roots. And I'm like, I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna like dig it up and I'm gonna cut the roots and I'm gonna really do the math on like, I got to ship this. I got to figure out all this. And so I let it go a full year. in the ground. The next spring, before it really took off, I dug it while it was still dormant. I messed around with a plant. I figured out my pricing, my shipping, and all that, selling roots. And then I planted this thing back in the ground after I had harvested it. I shipped some testers to some people I knew, and I just went with it. And we were going to just do more of the leaves, the same as we did the year before. And so I put an Etsy listing up with these roots, and I got a sale. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I dug the next plant, sunned them out, followed up with the person, and they were super happy with the way they showed up. They planted them. They started growing right away. They were very satisfied. I was like, okay, this is viable. Didn't sell very much. Had, like I said, I had started 25 plants. I think I dug 3 or 4 plants. And then an order came in, and I was walking by the one that I had originally dug when it was dormant. And it was full grown in with leaves. And I'm like, I wonder how much is grown. And it had been, 4 or 5 months. Like, huh. I grew it. I dug it up. And the amount of growth that had happened on the roots was enough to harvest the order for the second time in the year. And then when I dug it up and I was looking at all the roots that it had started to come up that I had cut off when I had harvested it, when it was dormant in the spring. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is pretty crazy. And so that winter, I sat down and I made a plan, and I basically harvested in the spring super early. I harvested all my plants that had been established for like a year and a half, and I took them out in another field and I propagated them all out. I replanted my 25 plants. I had pushing 200, I think, at the end. But basically pushed Etsy root sales, crown sales, and focused on that with the comfrey, and sold a ton, man. It's amazing. I've helped a bunch of people start up their own comfrey businesses. It's such a great plant. Once people realize how easy it is to grow, it's pretty easy to spend $30 for your own endless supply ever of leaf or root, or if you want to sell it. Man, that's what my root cuttings are, like $30-$40, something like that, for a dozen. So that was a super, super interesting process, how it developed in my brain, how going from hearing it on a podcast to really thinking it through to making sure it wasn't just this like get rich quick thing, and then actually taking the time. And it's far from get rich quick. It might be get rich, but it is a long cycle. And then watching that develop over the years and having the realizations that it's like, this is how much I would need. This is how much I need to, in Minnesota, dig as much as I want in the spring and be able to dig it again in the fall and have it grow back and like have a continual cycle, have some plants resting for a season, only harvest them for leaves. Like the operation was growing and growing and growing. And I had really put 5 years into it when we decided we were leaving, and I didn't want to give it up. I mean, you work like the farm was hard enough to give up. All the work and all the things we did there, it was hard to make that decision to just walk away from it. And we were trying to figure out how to continue something that we did there, whether it be take chickens with us, or I don't know. We talked about a ton of different things. Well, I figured out a way to kind of keep doing the comfrey, and I'm still selling it today in the camper, traveling around the country. I started a thing a couple of years ago where I offered a business in a box, basically enough comfrey to get you started, jump started, really. To where this time of year, I think this will probably air within the next couple of weeks, maybe.
It'll be by the end of the week.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Okay. So this time of year, it's spring, you get it in the ground, and with this package, it would like really jumpstart you to be selling by the fall, harvesting leaves a little sparingly over the summer, but by fall and going into the next year, you're set up. Well, I needed to prove this model out, and I wanted to prove it out I knew I could do it on acreage, on a few acres of land. I wanted to prove it in other scenarios, in a suburban lot, in an urban lot, like to where I could teach anybody that wanted to do this. Maybe not in an apartment, it'd be a little rough in an apartment, but anybody in suburbia, maybe a city lot with a yard. And so I started talking to people and saying, hey, I have this product. I want to send it to you. I want to tell you how to do it. But in return, I need you to sell my comfrey for me. So when I get an order, you need to fulfill it. You can do whatever you want. You can build your business as big as you want. I'll help you do it locally. I'll teach you how to sell it on Craigslist locally, in Facebook Marketplace. But when I have orders come in, I need someone to fill them. And I'll give you all the stuff for free. And so I had some takers on that, sent it out. And currently my guy that's fulfilling my orders is growing them in a city lot in Seattle. He was on your show, actually. Brian Norton.
Right.
Brian in Seattle, in his little permaculture wonderland, in his little city lot, is supplying all the comfrey. We sold, I think we sold pushing over $3,000 worth of comfrey last year. And we didn't really even push it. So we're still trying to get his stuff established. And that was while it was being established. We sold that much. Now he is rocking and going, and we just started offering 1 to 2 year old whole plants instead of just little root cuttings. Man, it was a fantastic partnership to set up to keep this business going and also document how to do it in a small lot, how to grow it in containers. I had somebody else take some and doing some experimentation in IBC totes in a suburban lot, in like a 3/4 to an acre lot. I had my experience doing it on acreage where you have a little room, and that would be anything over 2 to 20 acres. And right now I'm also doing some experimenting with guerrilla planning and running a business off of a secondary property, like a hunting property, just raw land acreage. If you got a back 40 that you're doing nothing with and you want to do this, I'm currently doing that and having pretty good success with that. That started last year about this time. So we're a year into that, and it's a long cycle. So,
long cycle, but like $3,000 on a small homestead is nothing to be shirked at.
I think Brian this year, year two, if we want, like, obviously we want, but like if we wanted to really just push his crop, he showed me what he has going, and he's an extreme case on a city lot. I mean, he's maximizing every inch of that property. He could easily sell $10,000-$15,000 worth of comfrey this year. It's connecting with the customers. It's having a bunch of different revenue streams from the plant itself, because, you know, there was 7 different products I sold from that plant when I was on the farm. This wasn't selling roots. I had 7 different things. Everything from I would sell my whole leaves, my fresh leaves. I would only harvest on Sunday. This is the beauty of the thing. On Etsy, you put orders and you say your ship time is 1 to 7 days. And if they order it on Sunday, you ship it the following Monday. If they order it on Wednesday, you ship it the following Monday. So I would accumulate my orders for the week, and I would go out on my day off and I would have 10 orders. I knew that was like, I could get that out of a 2 plants or less. So I'd dig 2 plants up. I would harvest them. I'd pack them all up, and they went to the post office on Monday morning. But when I would harvest that, I would have all this leaf matter. And I would say I had customers locally that I built relationships with, and I would text them and say, hey, I got 2 garbage bags full of comfrey leaf. Who wants it? And I would just drop it off on their doorstep. And then they would use it for their compost, feed it to their animals, whatever. If I had a lower supply of dried to use for my comfrey salves and my poultices. I would save some of that and dry it myself, sell the dry. There's so many different things you can do with the plant. And once you spend the $30, the $100, the $200 to get it in the ground, it's all gravy. Like, really, there's no cost in running this. There's no cost of inventory. Envelopes, maybe a little bit of time, some shipping. And you know what? Every time you harvest it, it grows back thicker. Every time you harvest it, it grows back more. So you don't ever run out of product either, unless you're really just stupid with it, basically.
Right. So it's a great business model for, and it ties right in with the permaculture. It's good for environment. You're spreading it. It's a comfrey as well. It has a big long taproot, brings nutrients up. So really good. Do you help people learn this stuff or?
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. On my website, the lotsproject.com is pretty straightforward, but, there's a comfrey consult, like a services page. I do comfrey consulting, I guess is what you call, I didn't really have a good name for it. I'll teach you about it. I can help you figure out what you should order to get started on your property, what you can expect to be able to sustain on your property. Do you want to grow it for an ornamental in your HOA, in your front garden? Because the thing is beautiful. If you let it grow and you only want to harvest it once a year to supply some leaf for the winter, man, it's a beautiful, big, broadleaf plant with really cool purple flowers. HOA ladies aren't going to be saying anything about that plant. Hey, I got to go out and trim my plant. It's getting a little big. So I can help you figure that out. I can show you what I did. If you have an acre, you want to throw it, something like this, the management plan I had. Yeah, that's all available. You can sign up for a free 30-minute chat. If you know you want to do this and you don't need any convincing from me, I have options where you can just order, you can order a consult session where I'll advise you how much you should order, give you kind of that optimized plan, and then give you a credit towards your order and a follow-up. And if you have questions and stuff on how to grow it. And then I also do that on a bigger level with the business, the follow-up after. And it's really a long cycle. I'm committing to you. It's a little, it's probably going to have to go up in price when I dive into it, but I'm committing long-term to you when I'm going to talk about business. And the great part about it is whatever I'm doing, I can still talk to you about that. Whether I shut down, I stop traveling in an RV, I do something else completely, you still have access to me, and I ran this business, and I'm going to continue. I'm not shutting this business down. So it's going to run forever because I set it up to be that way.
Yeah, it's definitely something I think I'll be doing once I get settled in a place. Because to me, it's you just plant it, set it, forget it for a while. And then I like that systemized approach where you just ship on a Sunday.
Yep. And you the best part about it is you get sick of it. You're like, man, I really just, it's not worth it. The juice ain't worth the squeeze for me. You just stop cutting it, and you got a great ornamental that's making your property better. If you want to chop and drop it in the fall, because it's so much organic matter, it's so much leaf matter that's so good for your soil. It benefits everything around it. If in the fall, all you do is go and chop it up and spread it out, and it'll grow back just as beautiful the next year. So, I mean, everything from just that ornamental that's going to benefit it by being there to running multiple different types of side hustles. It's a fantastic plant.
No, that's a great job. And I'll leave them links in the description as well for anybody that's interested, get in touch with Brian. And I think you do another, so when you left the homestead, that was your homestead sort of thing. And then I like the next one as well. So you went on the road and then your Hip Camp consultant.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Right. So Hip Camp is a pretty cool site. I mean, I focus on Hip Camp. There's several other companies that do the same thing, but basically it's a peer-to-peer rental, like an Airbnb. Instead of renting a room of your house or renting your whole house, you are renting a piece of your property for people to come and camp on. It's the alternative to staying at a campground or finding some state park, free land, stuff like that. It's usually on private land. There are some campsites listed on there too, but mostly on private land where somebody has a little extra space where you can pop up a tent. They might have a electrical hookup or a water hookup where you could bring an RV. There's all different scales of it. But what I'm doing, and I talked about a property earlier that I'm doing, the kind of the guerrilla secondary property model with the Comfrey. That's a friend of mine. He's in kind of my networks. He lives in Canada, owns a property here in Tennessee. And so he can only really utilize it for 6 months out of the year. And it's raw property. When we rolled up to it last year, we had to cut away into it from the easement road that we were on. So, I mean, definitely raw, no driveway, overgrown, old logging, selective logging property. And so what we're doing with it is we're putting in a system of trails. We're putting in a composting outhouse. We're installing, we're going to start with four primitive camping. So no water, no electric. Like I said, the composting outhouse, but tent sites or hammock sites, however you want to camp. Basically, you go through the hip camp site, you book a site for, you know, it'll probably be 10, 15, 20 bucks a night, depending on what the area will support. And you just rent the spot for the night, for the weekend, for the week. That is the initial phase of this. Tim, the property owner, is also looking for it to be kind of a getaway when he can come down here to the States, a bug out location if he needs to get out of Canada for some reason. But just all these options. So he needs, if he's coming down here, he needs a place to stay. We're going to start putting up little cabins. We have one up already, but we're going to start expanding as we install these campsites and tent campers start using them. Then we're going to build a small structure on it, be able to rent it out as a cabin or a campsite. And then as the campsites fill up with little cabins, we're going to develop more campsites. He's got 15 acres there, so we can support a ton of sites. And it's just going to be kind of a continual model. As we get the facilities for people to stay at, we're going to start doing more educational stuff. Nature walk weekends, primitive skill workshops, maybe some like digital retreats, like no phones, no technology, come and camp for the weekend. We'll make sure you have contact with the outside world if there's an emergency, but no devices, that kind of thing. Maybe some team building stuff for employers. I don't know. It's wide open, the different things you can do on a raw 15 acres. Once you have trails put in to move about, you have campsites strategically placed, you work with the right people to develop the right curriculums, and it's a really cool project that I'm glad I talked him into letting me do. it's basically making a little extra money from unused space.
Yeah, I think that's great. So basically for permaculture people, if they've just bought up at a raw land and they want what I do with it, that's two things that they can do straight away. Plant some comfrey, clear space, and start going through hip camp. Now hip camp, I think, is US based. I'm sure there's other similar things around the world, but it's like an easy way, just like let someone go and camp there. And then you know all the, because you've done that through your own travels, you've been to hip camps. And then you do consulting as well, don't you, for properties?
Yeah. I started with it actually when we owned our farm. We rented sites on our farm. And then when we left, we knew the site so well. We liked the site. We liked the people that we met through the site. And so we pretty much use that exclusively, other than free government national parks and stuff here. We have over 225 nights on hip camp properties since we've left in our RV. So I help people both figure out how to use the site as a camper. If you're looking to use the site to get away for the weekend, to go full-time RVing, I'll talk to anybody about that. And also on the property host side, I was getting into doing some on-site consulting, but this project here is really what I want to focus on. I will do remote consulting for anybody that wants it. I'll talk them through the process. I'll answer questions up into, you know, really doing a virtual walk through your property. If you have, if that's your desire, if you like really want to get into this, I'm more than willing to help you. And, you know, if the project's right, you never know. We are mobile, so there is a possibility to get to roll out to someplace too, if the situation's right. But definitely, everything remote is on the table, and that 30 minutes still stands, like that I talked about with the Comfrey. Any of my consulting services, anything that I offer on my site, I always, if I'm going to ask you to pay for anything, I want to talk to you for a half an hour and make sure that we jive, that you're going to be okay with me, that we can interact and communicate well, and I can teach you the way you need to learn, because I don't want to take anybody's money that's not getting their value. That's like the base of my whole philosophy with everything in my life is value for value. And man, like, I want somebody to be sure before they give me their money.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And I like too the way you haven't let being on the road stop your the business, and you're doing business on the land. So for anybody who's traveling, there is possibilities out there that you just can't. You don't have to say, "Well, I need my 20 acres, or I can't do anything."
Oh no!
It's like you're working with community that you've built up, yep. Using that value for value exchange to build your social capital, your community capital, or whatever. Can't really know what it's called, but I think that's a really good example. And there's two businesses you can start straight off the bat.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, so there's even the possibility of setting up the business. Like I never really thought about it too much. It's popped into my head before, but you, even without property, if you know somebody, there's a whole movement right now with kind of the lease the land for grazing cattle. There's no reason, if you really want to grow this plant, if you want to grow Comfrey, going back to Comfrey, that you can't convince somebody to have it on their property. Whether you go there and you maintain it, you run the kind of the business on the edge of their field, or next to their garden. I could probably write out a pitch for anybody to walk up to a homestead and say, "Hey, I want to rent, or I want to use, here's the rent, here's the value I'm going to bring to you. We're going to put a plant in here that's going to benefit your property. I'm going to propagate it on your property wherever you want as part of my business model. All I need is a 3x20-foot row off on the edge of a field somewhere, and I'm going to plant something, and I'll cut you in," or whatever the deal is. Like, you could share, you could do a lease to run this business. Like, just for a little side hustle. I mean, I had never really thought to pursue it that much, but as we were talking here, there's no reason you can't do what I'm doing, just finding people that you know in your community that are willing to host those plants, that don't want anything to do with it. Like, you could easily do that, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it's something I'll definitely be looking into. I'll get back to you how it goes. but if I've got many things that I want to do, it's always difficult picking ones. But if I like the fact that it's a small investment, and it's particularly for people who maybe have bought some land and they can't get out to it, like your friend who, right, well, let's make use of it even while I'm not there.
And then that's really nice, because if you get out there and get it established, and maybe you check on it a little bit here and there up front, once that's there, it's there when you're ready for it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a tomato plant where you plant the seed and you take care of it and then you put it out and there's a little less maintenance, but you know, you got to use it up by the end of the year. these perennial plants, and I'm starting to explore more. We're doing some trials with elderberry. We're doing some tree propagation out at that property. So there's a lot of things we're pursuing long term, and just like any of those, you just get it started, and once it's established and there, when it's time, when you want, when you're ready, it's there for you. I wish I had planted it when I heard Jack talk about it and didn't wait a year, because it is a long cycle. It is a year before you're going to be harvesting it and have like fruitful, meaningful product to sell. So yeah, it's like, what is that? The famous, when's the best time to plant a tree? When's the best time to plant your comfrey was like last fall.
Second best times now, yeah. Right? I think too, it's the compounding effect, because if you've one plant this year, you have four next year, then you have 16. And within, so at this stage, again, well, if you're a year out, you're...
that was part of my business model, was every time I dug an order, and I had to stop this, and that'll tell you how much it just multiplies. Every time I dug an order, I planted five new plants plus the plant I dug. So I never really took the crowns. I sold crowns, but even when I sold a crown, my plants were still established. I would sell part of a crown and put the plant back, the majority of the crown. And then I would take five really good root cuttings and plant five new plants somewhere on my 35 acres. And I got to a point where it was just everywhere. It was all along our house. It was around our trees. It was in where it was supposed to be. It was by the garden. It was down growing in the compost. It was in the woods everywhere. And I was like, I mean, it was in the front yard where I would do my processing every day. I had like this portable fish cleaning table that I would do my orders. And because I sprayed off all the roots, just the excess, and it sat in the yard. This is where my St. Bernards would run out and run over it and back and forth, and like not anywhere you would say it was planted. And then all of a sudden there's like a 2-foot comfrey plant in my front yard in the grass. Like that's how honey badger this stuff is.
And there is two types of comfrey in there. There's one that seeds and one that doesn't seed.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the wild comfrey don't, I mean, you can, for sure, you can. I'm not telling you don't do what you want to do. But it seeds and spreads, and it's invasive, depending if you don't want it or not. I think that word gets misused a lot. It will spread like crazy, and you won't really want to deal with stopping it. The comfrey I sell, Bocking number 4, Bocking number 14 is another variety. There's several. It's named after the town it was developed in. It is what it is. I didn't make up the name, but this is sterile. It will slowly spread through the roots as it grows out. Eventually, I never let it grow enough without harvesting it to find out how big it actually would get. But in 2 years, it didn't outgrow where I wanted it. The only way to propagate it is through root cuttings, through crown cuttings. So put it where you want it, make sure that's where you want it, because if it's there, it's there. Once it's established, it's tough. It's tough to get rid of, but it's not going to take over.
Right. Well, that's what you want. Something vigorous where it is, but it's not going to, spread.
Works great in guilds is kind of that mid story. Because it gets, if you let it go wild, like not wild, but just don't take care of it. It'll end up, I would say, like 3 foot tall with a nice crown, and then about 4 foot across, big broad leaf. So really fill in underneath those smaller trees or shrubs.
Yeah, I always include it now in every design I do. Comfrey's on there because it's
just so beneficial.
I will be saying to clients now as well that if they need help with setting up their property, either hip camp or getting comfrey on the go, I'll be passing on your details.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
We can't finish without you. You did mention your dogs briefly. You travel with a couple of, or three St. Bernards on this.
Yeah. So when we were on the farm, we had German Shepherds when we first moved to our farm. And my wife and I really moved to the farm to slow down. And our German Shepherds were really high strung. We had two of them, and they were super high strung, very alert, attack kind of guard dogs when we were living in the city. And so we when they kind of passed on, one of them did, and the other was kind of getting old, and we were trying to figure out what kind of dog we wanted to get. And we were like, well, we really come out to the country to slow down, to kind of be, you know, really chill out. And so we were looking at dogs, and the St. Bernard, man, you don't get any more kind of chill and relaxed as a St. Bernard. And so we got one and fell in love with him. And he was awesome. We ended up getting another one. And because of some certain situations, we also got another dog at that same time. That's a St. Bernard Great Dane mix from the same people. And so we had these three dogs on the farm. They had an acre fenced in that they could roam around and whatever. And when we decided to move, we don't get rid of pets. That's a commitment, but we weren't going to let it stop us from moving. And we moved three St. Bernards into an RV with us, into a 32-foot travel trailer. We have 180-pound, he's probably more than that now, 180-pound St. Bernard, 160-pound St. Bernard, and 140-pound Bernard Great Dane mix. And it's something, man. It's it is definitely something. let's
say that. Well, they have their own channel as well, don't they? Well,
yeah,
they
still have it.
We'll put that in the links as well. I make sure my checks out.
They get a spotlight on the YouTube channel for sure, and then they got all sorts of Facebook and TikTok, Baby Walter and Company. So
That's cute. Brian, is there anything else you'd like to mention now before we wrap up?
No, man. I just appreciate you having me on. I love your podcast and what you got going on. The whole concept of everything you're doing is fantastic. I think you're bringing a lot of valuable education to people, and I'm glad to be a part of that. And if people want to get a hold of me, I have a podcast that I do every morning, Monday through Friday. It's not necessarily permaculture based. It's not really anything based. It's my life documentation, I guess. Whatever I'm thinking about, whatever I'm doing, things that irritate me, things that make me laugh, and basically a morning coffee chat. Check out my YouTube channel. Check out that. You know, if you want to grow comfrey, I'm your man. I will tell you how. Even if you're not in the U.S., we only ship to the U.S. If you're not in the U.S., I can walk you through it. It will grow. It will grow where you're at.
And if you're in the UK and Ireland in the next year, you can order it off me.
There you go. But man, no, I just appreciate you coming and having me on, and I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. So
that's great. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for sharing your knowledge and sharing that. I think it's very beneficial for people who are just going on the permaculture property and what they can do. So it's great stuff. Brian, thanks very much, guys. That was the Brian Alexevich on the Permaculture Vine podcast. We have our PDCD professional course out now. If you want to check out the link, www.pdcdpro.com, where you can learn digital design, how to build a website, and basically build your consultancy business from scratch. Or if you draw your permaculture designs in the minute and you want to learn how to do them digitally, we teach you how to do that. So follow that link in the description. Brian, thanks again. Cheers.